Today's program was brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, producing the country's best dry, cured, and aged hams, bacon, and sausage using 100% pasture-raised, certified humane Berkshire cuts. For more information, visit edwardsvaham.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Afternoon, everyone. It's Wednesday and it's 5 o'clock. Actually, it's a little after five. Apologies for that slight delay in getting started. If it's 5 o'clock and it's Wednesday, that means you're listening to me, Phil Colicchio, here on the Heritage Radio Network, doing the show we call The Business of the Business. That is the show in which we explore the business side of the hospitality industry. We talk about the business of restaurants, we talk about the business of hotels. Sometimes we talk about the business of aircraft hospitality and yachting hospitality. We explore the whole retinue of the hospitality industry. If you're missing this broadcast live, every once in a while someone misses it live, you can go to our website here at theheritageradionetwork.org. Click on to the icon on our beautiful new website for the business of the business. And you can listen to any one of the episodes that we have retained for you in our records. So we invite you to do that. I thank you for your patience. I know it's been a bit since I've been on the air live. I have to blame Mother Nature and a couple of the airlines for that delay. But I'm happy to be back. And I'm joined today with my colleague, Jasmine Moy. Hi, Jasmine.
Hi, how are you?
Great. You may recognize Jasmine's voice because she's been a guest on this show a while back. And subsequently, Jasmine and I developed a professional bond. And Jasmine is now working with me at Taylor and Colicchio and also working with Colicchio Consulting. Thank you for coming today, Jasmine.
Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you, because, you know, I want to be your foil today. Today's commentary is going to really reflect on sort of hot topics in the legal, on the legal side of the hospitality industry. And this is coming to you, audience, by way of the Hospitality Attorneys Conference held at the end of last week. Last week in February, in Houston, at the University of Houston, the Hospitality Lawyers Association. And I was privileged once again to be invited to the conference, to speak at the conference. But I was also doubly privileged to be able to sit in on four presentations that were made to the top general counsel in the hospitality industry. By industry professionals around the country. So while I was there, I corresponded with Jasmine and said, hey, these topics are, we're seeing them every day. It's good to know that we remain at the forefront of that industry. We have the good fortune of practicing our trade here in New York. And I know that that you and I have been working on a number of these topics, but I think that what we should do is give it a little bit of background on the conference, and to the extent any attorneys listen to this program, I hope you'll at least check out the Hospitality Lawyers Association. It's actually a pretty terrific trade group, and if you're not an attorney, but you are involved in the hospitality industry, and your job occasionally runs you up against legal issues, it's an outstanding resource. hospitalitylawyer.com is just an outstanding resource for hospitality professionals to use, both to identify potential counsel, if you need counsel, but also there's a raft of wonderful information, articles written that are very topical, touch on key issues, particularly on employment, on liquor liability around the country. These are not New York-centric articles, although New York is prominently referenced in many of them. But the Hospitality Lawyers Association was created by a PhD, Stephen Barth, who teaches at the University of Houston, and Houston has an outstanding school of hospitality. But Stephen is an organizational freak, and he has put the Hospitality Lawyers Association on the map, does a terrific three-day seminar and gathering down in Houston. I will tell you that while the town of Houston has never occurred to them that zoning laws might be a good idea. They actually have developed a pretty great restaurant culture down there, so we got to sample mm-hmm. some of it. And as a matter of fact, you know Houston pretty well.
My younger brother lived there for many years.
Really?
Yeah.
and besides, everybody thinks it's a shot in a beer town, but that's really not what's going on there now, is it?
No. A lot of up and coming, a lot of really great young chefs who are making a mark or headed to Houston.
We'll give a tip and we'll put a note out to anyone who's traveling to Houston. The restaurant called Trinity, T-R-I-N-I-T-I, outstanding restaurant, outstanding service, outstanding cocktail program, and a very genuine and patient staff. I can tell you that, because waiting on a bunch of lawyers isn't the way most of them want to spend their evenings. But four big topics came up. We'll touch on them all. Jasmine, I'm going to want you to expound on some of this too, because you're seeing them every day. But mm-hmm. The first presentation that we received was from a statistics group in the hotel industry, giving us the current read on what hotel markets are growing in the United States after what the industry referred to as a trough, a low point over the last few years of growth. Again, we bring you this program from New York City, which not surprisingly still leads the league in the United States in the development of new hotel rooms. But surprisingly, the southern part of the United States is showing a significant growth. And by southern, I guess I mean southwest. We're seeing significant growth in Dallas, significant growth in Houston, significant growth in Atlanta, southeast, and also some additional growth, believe it or not, now in Nevada, where we think that there are plenty of hotels there. When pressed, the statisticians say these hotel developments follow hotel room expansion follows the economy. So that means, not surprisingly, Dallas is seeing an upswing in its employment numbers, and manufacturers and business providers opening in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Surprise, surprise! Texas does not have any state income tax, so there's a pretty solid reason for businesses to be relocating there. And that, of course, brings us to the idea, this is all right, if there's that growth going on, and of course there's the growth going on in New York, that means economic tides are changing as well. And for lawyers, you know, that means legal issues are coming up. So the first big legal issue that was tackled at the seminar was Equal Employment Opportunity Commission enforcement, EEOC for short. And we had representatives from the EEOC in attendance, but I think more importantly for the hospitality folks out there, for both employees and employers, we had a couple of counsel who deal with the EEOC defending claims brought by the EEOC on behalf of employment. Strangely, the EEOC statistics indicate that the growth markets for EEOC claims against employers are in Philadelphia and, of all places, Charlotte, North Carolina. Now, this is focused solely on the hospitality industry, meaning hotels and restaurants. For those of you who don't deal with the EEOC on a regular basis, while its stated mission is to protect the rights of all employees in the United States from abusive work practices, the EEOC has been a bane to the existence, frankly, of many employers, because once you are the subject of an EEOC complaint, you are investigated. There is not a timetable in which the investigation needs to be completed. You are interviewed. You are interviewed. Records of your testimony are kept. And again, while the EEOC's stated purpose has been is laudable, what we've seen is that it can bankrupt a small business through an EEOC claim. And the restaurant industry is particularly vulnerable to the claims because the Obama administration has made a concentrated effort to step up enforcement. It's a policy statement toward vulnerable employees. And vulnerable employees, Jasmine, we've talked about this, are immigrants.
Yep.
Particularly young immigrants, mm-hmm, who can find themselves on the short end of the employment stick, particularly in hospitality environments, where where those jobs that go wanting, the 3 a.m. To 8 a.m. dishwashing shift, that type of thing, are often found. So if you are in the hospitality industry, either as an employer or an employee, if you're an employer, please check your insurance policies to make sure that your employment practices liability insurance covers you for EEOC investigations and claims. And if you are an employee who is not being treated fairly by your employer, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, the EEOC, is a free service. You don't pay for it. It is a federal agency. You can reach out. The investigator will assist you in articulating your situation. Sometimes your complaint falls within the jurisdiction and the boundaries of the EEOC. Sometimes it's they can't solve everything for you. But I can tell you it's developed into much more than a cottage industry. The hospitality industry is highly focused on it. Some of the largest law firms in the country are working on policy and procedure to deal with the EEOC on behalf of the industry. And I think the next year is going to be an important year in the enforcement scenario. Jasmine, we've seen in New York in particular a lot of claims in the last couple of years relating to the admittedly arcane tip pooling statutes,
yep,
right?
Yep, wage and labor laws.
What have you seen?
I think the difficult part is the rules change from year to year. Mm-hmm. Not everybody keeps updated as to what changes have been enacted and when, especially on the accounting end. And at least from what I know, although I haven't litigated any of these cases personally, it's a lot more a matter of the restaurant and the people who are doing the bookkeeping and the accounting for the restaurant not keeping up to the level and the changes in laws. But a lot of time it's people being underpaid by the, mm-hmm, hour, working overtime and not getting compensated for overtime hours that they've worked.
Right, right. It's pretty challenging. Restaurant general managers, restaurant controllers, hotel general managers. I mean, you think about how this impacts a national chain. Part of this conference was really sort of a reawakening for me that sometimes we live in this little closed world that's a big closed world in New York. But the general counsel of the Hyatt Hotel Group was in attendance at the conference and, you know, gave us some pretty significant war stories about entanglements with the EEOC on a national basis and how many millions of dollars it cost just to cooperate with the investigations, which in his case, luckily, came up without any violations. But still, you're out several million dollars as a result of investigators who are doing their jobs, some of whom are well-trained, some of whom aren't. But they're certainly not as well-trained, usually, as a, you know, as a 10- or 12-year attorney who does investigations. So keep your ears and eyes open, all of you professionals that are in the industry out there. If you see equal employment opportunity correspondence coming into your restaurant or your hotel, well, make sure you call your lawyer. Make sure you call your insurance carrier, and make sure that you are reviewing how you are compensating your employees. The next component that has, I guess, dominated really the hotel industry has been the financing of new mixed-use developments. And that's a very hot topic because mixed-use development effectively died 3 or 4 years ago. The idea of financing a project that would include a hotel, apartments, retail, food and beverage, all in one grouping, just stopped occurring when the recession was in its, you know, was really in its trough. As they said, but that there's been a big resurgence. But the resurgence has only occurred in two markets.
New York.
And Florida. So we've seen firsthand new projects in Florida and in New York that have actively been soliciting food and beverage for mixed-use projects that are already funded, that have already broken ground. I express this because it's nothing but great news for the hospitality industry that the financing arms are back in full swing, are focused on hospitality ventures. We don't have to go too far, seeing the hotel industry just had a couple of public offerings. A recent restaurant group I haven't seen in a while has gone public. I don't want to tout who they are, but rather those the idea of a new restaurant group going public is a pretty extraordinary event. So that means the capital has their eyes focused on the food and beverage industry. The capital has its eyes focused on the hospitality industry as a whole. We're going to take a little break. When we come back, I'm going to talk to you a little bit more about where the food and beverage component is heading in the hotel industry. Phil Colicchio, the business of the business. I'm here with my associate, Jasmine Moy. And we're just giving you a little bit of a legal update and hospitality issues today. We'll be back in a bit.
Like what you hear so far? Support the network and become a member. Membership helps us bring you the best food radio in the world and gives you access to thousands of dollars in discounts at the sustainably minded businesses that support us. To become a member, visit heritageradionetwork.org today. Thank you.
program was brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons. Edwards Suriano hams are aged to perfection for no less than 400 days and hickory smoked to achieve a deep mahogany color. The Edwards name is well known for its world-class aged and cured meats. Their exclusive curing and aging recipe produces a unique flavor profile that enhances the quality characteristics of Berkshire pork. Optimum amounts of pure white fat marbling contribute to a flavor that's a delicate, perfect balance between sweet and salty. For more information, visit edwardsvaham.com.
We are back on the Business of the Business. I am so psyched that a ham company is sponsoring this session. Serrano Ham, boy, that's as good as it gets. VA Hams, I hope all of you are going to at least consider going out tonight and getting some finely marbled Serrano ham and enjoying it. The music that you heard bringing us in is from the Punch Brothers, Movement and Location, from our friends Chris Thiele and Gabe Witcher and the gang. And they'll be touring again soon. I hope you get a chance to see them. And also want to give a quick hello. It's February 19th today. I want everyone to know that because that is the day that my young friend Jamie Grubel brought home a bronze medal to the Yay! United States in the two women bobsled today. So we're very proud of you, Jamie. Congratulations. And hopefully you can stay safe over there in Sochi and get back and show us that medal. The Hospitality Conference in Houston, the Hospitality Lawyers Conference in Houston last week is what we're talking about today. And a lot of you probably think that that's dry as a bone. And God, what can you do for 3 days with a bunch of lawyers in Houston? Well, if you're a student of the industry, I can tell you that you can learn an awful lot. You can make a lot of connections. It's a great vehicle for gathering ideas. Every once in a while, you have to step back and remind yourself, you don't know everything, Phil. No, you don't know everything, Jasmine. We've got colleagues all over the country that do this. Mm-hmm. Happily, however, I learned again that just when I thought there might be a ceiling on the interest in food and beverage in the hotel industry and providing the ability for third parties to contract with hotels and provide those services, I couldn't have been happier to learn that it is hotter than ever. It is still a huge topic within the industry, a topic that makes me happy because it provides us with the ability to service both the hotel industry and the restaurant industry as attorneys. It provides us with the ability to assist in curating projects as consultants. Jasmine, how many new projects have you seen on your desk in the last 60 days?
Oh, gosh. I don't even know if I can count. at least a dozen, if not more.
Yeah, and you know, the nice part is that this interest is a real interest. It's here to stay. The idea of whether or not the hotel industry might want to get back into providing its own restaurants, things like that.
I mean, we've seen it firsthand in New York. Some of the best restaurants that have opened in this city in the last 2 years, many, many of them have been in restaurants. So, again, New York is a leader in that front.
You know, there's a great ability, of course, to pick and choose here. Mm-hmm. And to have, a terrific hotel. Not so many take chances on unproven mm-hmm. operators, but proven operators. You should all be driven out there if you are restaurateurs. You should be driven to operate your enterprises efficiently because there is gold at the end of the rainbow for you in other projects if you do. If you do great food, but you can't show any profit, people aren't going to be interested in helping you expand. But if you are able to operate your business efficiently, if you are able to do great dining and still be profitable, well, I'll tell you what, you should just show up next year at the Hospitality Lawyers Conference and you'll walk away with a dozen contracts from hotels and developers who are looking for you. Now, what we found was that there was a pretty broad variety that the industry, the hotel industry in particular, was focused on. They weren't just thinking about rock star chefs anymore. The Repairs and the Batalis and the Kellers, and I mean the great big names, while they still trip off of everyone's tongue, that's not the groups that are getting these opportunities on a regular basis. They're searching out excellence regionally, trying to find regional chefs, regional operators who can provide hotels in cities that are not New York and not Los Angeles with top quality experience, can fit within a hotel environment, and frankly, can assist the hotel in maintaining a differentiating factor in their markets. Lots of business talk, right? Well, this is the business of the business, so we're going to talk that way. There are three primary areas of contracting that go on. And again, I'm happy to report that the flexibility that I was hearing from general counsel out there really made me feel good about the prospects for, again, quality restaurant operators around the country. The industry is embracing what we refer to as the management agreement or the operating agreement much more so than it did even 2 or 3 years ago. Now, in that type of arrangement, the hotel will usually seek out a restaurant operator to provide a variety of services, but principally a restaurant. Often it will be more than just the restaurant, providing the food and beverage for the entire hotel. And the way that that deal will work, and again, in very, very gross terms, is that the hotel will provide the operator with a build-out space. The operator may be asked to contribute an amount to that build-out, maybe not. Depends on how the operator negotiates and their position in the deal. They will be offered a 5 to 10 year contract to provide those services. And they will often be paid based upon a formula which includes a percentage of gross revenues from food and beverage sales and a percentage of net revenues from food and beverage sales, which is usually known as the incentive fee. Be incentivized restaurant operators to operate profitable ventures. If you do, and if you can, and if you can demonstrate that you've done it more than once, well, you heard it from me. You heard it from Jasmine. You're going to have opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are not thinking about these things, you should be. You should be talking to any hotel industry insiders that you can. Because, again, this space is no longer reserved for the rock stars. And hotels and mixed-use developers are really looking for good chefs, good operators. You don't have to be a Michelin star. You don't have to be a New York Times 4-star or even 3-star. You got to be a good operator. You got to understand hospitality. And if that interests you, well, keep I'll give you my phone number after we're done. But but in truth, the industry is really embracing you right now. So there are still... Jasmine, you're working on a couple right now. There are still developers who are married to the traditional lease form.
Agreed.
Right? And when you're seeing that, what are you seeing, Jasmine, in terms of, are there more generous allowances for tenant improvement now from landlords who are trying to get hospitality groups into their space?
Yeah, there are, certainly.
Yeah. What we've seen in the past... is that developers slash landlords, they try to be a little more guarded with their tenant improvement allowances. And for those of you who don't know, a tenant improvement allowance is the amount of money, usually dictated by the square foot, that an owner will provide to the tenant to improve its space, to provide furniture, fixtures, and equipment, FF&E, as they say in the trade, but also to paint the walls, to, you know, to hang some art, to buy some product. And while that format has turned some operators off because it requires them to raise capital, operators of restaurants, please listen. The market now is in your favor. New construction in particular, because of what we talked about at the beginning of the show, the influx of institutional capital into these projects is allowing ownership to be more generous with tenant improvement allowance. Even 2 years ago, if you got a couple of dollars a square foot of a tenant improvement allowance and you were a restaurateur on a lease, you thought you were doing okay. But I will tell you that now I'm seeing restaurants that are getting 50% and above of their build-out costs paid through tenant improvement allowances. And these are not, again, these are not rock stars. These are good operators, operators who have succeeded on more than one venture, who can show profitability, and frankly, you know, who have the infrastructure to be able to show someone that, hey, if you invest this money in me, I've got the group that can operate this and pull it off. You'll see deals that are hybrids that include some pretty interesting structures. We don't talk about unions. At some point, I'd love to have a hospitality union representative on the show. Talk about that side of the world. Because obviously, unions are super important to the industry. People are passionate about them on both sides of the both sides of the issues. But in a nutshell, and to wrap up today's show, if you are in the hospitality industry, if you are in the hotel industry, a worker in the hotel industry, if you are a student of the game of the hospitality industry, the restaurant world, if you are a young person or an old person, or a person who has restaurant experience, it is your time to shine right now. There are more opportunities than there are talent out there right now. And that is showing itself through the growth of the hotel industry, through the embracing of third-party food and beverage contracting by the hotel community and by the development community. If this interests you, if you'd like more information about it, well, you can reach out to either Jasmine or myself. Jasmine, give the people your contact info.
You can email me at jmoy, that's jmoy, at tcslawyers.com.
And you can reach me at pcolicchio@tcslawyers.com. And you can also reach me at phil@colicchioconsulting.com. And I want to thank you, Jasmine, for coming coming along today.
Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. Thanks for working with me and doing such a great job. And
I try.
And actually being at the forefront of what really is a surge in the industry.
Very exciting time.
Next week, we're going to have a little surprise guest for you. But for today, this is Phil Colicchio thanking you all for your patience, fighting through this nasty winter that we're having here, and listening to the business of the business here on the Heritage Radio Network. Jasmine, can I get some pizza now?
Yeah.
All right, back to Roberta's. Bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.